Anyway, hello, Nick.
Hey, Martin.
How's it going?
Sorry, I'm just leaning over. Yeah, very good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, good.
I've had a really good week, actually.
You have?
Yeah.
That's good.
I don't know if it's because of the change in my work schedule or the effects of doing the personal retreat thing.
Yeah.
Which still, I guess, is the change in the work schedule is slightly, or is because of the personal retreat. Did you do the StrengthsFinders test?
No, not yet. I haven't, no. No, I've been too busy this week. I need to do that, yeah.
It takes 35 minutes.
I know, but 35 minutes seems hard to find at the moment. Yeah, no, I haven't done that yet. Definitely on my list, though.
Right, well, we got our first review in iTunes.
Woohoo!
It's from Horea, who's a good friend.
Right.
But they all count.
That counts, yeah.
5-star review, so we're going to buy Horea a video when we see him next at a conference or something like that.
Yeah, that sounds
so nice. I know paying for links and probably reviews is against Google's guidelines, but we'll do it anyway, so... My thinking was, anybody who gives us a link, so writes up a little blog post or gives us a tweet or a 5-star review in iTunes, we'll buy a beer when we see them next.
When we see them,
the next, either the networking event or conference or whatever.
That sounds good.
So, get leaving us some reviews. That'd be awesome. Thank you. So how did you get on with your actions last week?
Okay, yeah. I had two, I think. One was to do more cold calls and the other one was to actually publish this LinkedIn article.
Yep.
So I haven't done all 7, which I said I was going to do, but I've done 4, so I'm nearly there. I've got a day and a half to go yet, so I'll get some more done tomorrow. So I'll get my 7, I'm sure of that. As predicted, the bookkeeping vertical that I was going cold calling, I did 4 more calls to people that are bookkeepers. And there's no real interest in it from their point of view. Most of them just don't use Excel, or they use it as little as possible is the general phrase they use. So I didn't pick anything up from that, but I learned a lot in doing the cold calling, so that's good. That was part of the purpose of that. And so now I've been working on a script and a list of people to call for the next round, which will start probably on Monday now.
Yeah.
So that's another action for next week, is for more cold calls. I'll go for 7 again next week. The LinkedIn article, I finally published it yesterday, so it's not quite 24 hours old on LinkedIn. And then once I published it, I set it up as a sponsored sponsored updates you can do. So that, it's been running, it's less than 24 hours. So if I just bring up the right page, it's been running for less than 24 hours. It's done 1,927 impressions with 9 clicks and 3 social actions. So it's about 0.5-ish% click-through rate. And then there's 3 social actions, which are like people liking it.
Yeah.
So it could be people sharing it or people liking it, but I'm pretty sure all these 3 are just likes. I mean, it's okay. It's bloody expensive, though.
I was going to say, how much does it cost?
It's, at the moment, the average cost per click is £3.47.
Right. As cost per click rather than like paying a certain amount to promote it on LinkedIn.
Yeah, I think you might be able to choose a different way, but I just chose cost per click. So it's expensive, but I don't know. I mean, it's 9 times better than my previous efforts at running ads on LinkedIn because they got no clicks.
Right.
In fact, I've just left it running and it's still got no clicks. So that's over 2 or 3 months now.
Mm-hmm.
Those ads now, it could be the quality of my ads, but you know. There's just no clicks at all on those, whereas this has already got 9 clicks, which is fine. There's no engagement from those 9 clicks. I can see in the Google Analytics that people have come through, but there's not done anything else, basically. So
Right. They
just read the article or just bounced, which again, it's back into that zone of uncertainty of, is it the copy, is it the, what is it that's, that people, are they not really interested, they're just bored on the coffee break and having a click through and
but
stuff.
It's not been running for very long, has it?
No, that's 24 hours.
How long do you expect
hours?
It to run for?
I'm going to run it for a week.
Okay.
And then the problem is, at that price, you know, I can't afford to run it for too long without, I don't want to throw money down the drain. So I'll give it a while, probably a week, see how it does. And then, make a decision on it then. But, it's difficult because you get going and you think, this is great, and I'm getting some clicks and getting some impressions and all the rest of it. People are liking the article on LinkedIn, which is, I hope, a good sign.
Does it tell you who's liked it?
Yes, I can find that out.
So can you then drop a message on
LinkedIn?
Yeah,
I was thinking about that, collecting a list of them and then maybe contacting them. But you just, you know, because there's nothing happens beyond that, and it's only 9 clicks, so I, you know, so it's not really enough to make any conclusions.
Mm.
But you just kind of think, well, nobody's doing anything else. Why aren't they going anywhere else on my website? Why aren't they signing up, you know, yeah, and all the rest of it? It's difficult to know whether something else that I'm doing is wrong. But we'll see how it goes. We'll give it another week. So that's looking better than the ads, like I say. The cold calls, I mean, they've gone through for that niche. So I'm probably going to... These LinkedIn ads I've been targeting at the same sort of niche as the customer that I had, the one customer I've had so far. You know, based on the assumption that maybe they'll have similar problems that that customer had. So, and that's the same sort of vertical that I'm going to target with the cold calls next week.
Right.
So, yeah, that's it. So that's really update on what I've been doing the last week.
So with the bookkeepers you've been calling up, have you been asking them if they've got any other general business problems around IT?
That's something I'm bad at, actually. One of the notes I've been taking on the calls, I've also got another column in the spreadsheet which says what I should have done. And a lot of it is push further on this point that they said or ask about this. I mean, probably about half of them, so about 5 of them out of the 10 that I spoke to, I've actually tried to push a bit more for any other sort of areas that they might have problems with.
But yeah.
They're all pretty small. They're all sort of single person businesses or maybe 2 or 3 people. And the feeling is that they use the big online accounting software packages, but anything else they just do themselves, or will, you know, most of them say they're pretty good with Excel, and if they do have to do anything in Excel, they'll just do it themselves. And I've pushed some of them to say, well, you know, wouldn't you prefer to save that time and spend it on something else by paying, you know, a small amount to get someone like me to do it or my product to do it? And you know, most of them just didn't click on that at all. They just were going it. So I didn't think there would be that much interest there, and there isn't. So just move on, really.
Oh, good luck with the calls next week.
Yeah, cheers.
So from the actions I had in terms of becoming proficient at creating WordPress sites,
this is how I've really
restructured my day, I guess. So the first couple of hours I've been spending learning and doing WordPress.
Right.
So rather than try and do that at the end of the day or making sure it's the first thing I get done, so I spend an hour on watching Treehouse videos, which have been good, and then another hour fiddling around with WordPress, building out the site. So the other action was to get Alex's golf site up, so I've got something up for him now. It's just a basic structure, really, and some of his photos that he sent over loaded into the slider and stuff.
Yeah.
So that then feeds into the next action, which I need to work on him next week in terms of getting content written for the site.
Are you going to ask him to write the content, or are you going to write it for him?
Well, as this is the first one, I'm going to see how it goes, really.
Yeah.
I mean, ideally, it'll be him that writes the content, but I want to give him guidelines around, you know, what kind of things to write, perhaps.
Yeah.
Because if the idea takes off and we end up building 1,000 golf websites, I don't want to have to write content for 1,000 golf websites, because it'll be the same, because there's only so many different ways you can write the same kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Ideally, it'll certainly be him. Whether if he writes the content and perhaps I add it onto the site initially until, you know, he's perhaps had a chance. Maybe he doesn't, would want to learn, certain people would want to learn their publishing platform, I guess. Other people would just be happy to email over updates and stuff. So,
yeah.
But
it's a bit of an extra commitment for you, isn't it, if you're long term? I mean, I know now it's not such a problem, but long term, you don't want to be typing in the content for people. You want them to be doing
it. I don't personally, but there's no reason why you can't hire someone to do that.
Yeah.
Once you've got enough customers to justify it.
Yeah. And something that I know somebody, a local business that does this, they do case studies and things like that for people. So they write them up for them. And what they do is they basically just ring them up and interview them over the phone for 10 minutes, asking them various questions. Then they use the answers to those questions to write the article.
Yeah.
If you could find somebody,
one of the things we're hoping to do is obviously get into the habit of sending out email newsletters for people. So that is a commitment of writing content either once, depending on how often you want to do it, once every couple of weeks or once a month.
Yeah.
And if, like you say, if that does make it easier, of either they can ring into like a pre-recorded line and just give like some bullet points of what they want to cover in the newsletter, and then we can write it up for them or something around that. But it's been interesting in terms of learning WordPress, because it was Theme Furnace is the site that I bought some themes from to get started with, rather than building the themes myself. And it's been interesting because learning how people have constructed their themes and the various options for the themes and everything is like another level of learning on top of WordPress.
Yeah.
some of the documentation around themes is a bit sketchy, and how to change, you know, certain bits and pieces of text here and there. Some of it's hard coded into the theme as well, so you end up having to go and edit HTML and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, that, I mean, that's interesting, and just figuring all of that stuff out.
And widgets and widget areas and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it's there's a lot there.
That's been good. And interestingly, Sophie, this is, well, I seem to be getting interest now from people about building simple WordPress sites from all over the place.
Right.
Well, she may, she's, because of January and, you know, wanting to start the new year off well, she's decided to try and cut out refined sugar from her diet.
Okay.
And so she made some nice biscuits and some rice pudding at the weekend, and posted it on Facebook, a picture of the rice pudding, just put, you know, nice sugar-free rice pudding, and like four or five of her friends asked her for the recipe. And I said to her, well, I registered this domain for you years ago called sophiesfood.com, where the idea was she was going to write up some of her recipes and put it on. I was like, you could have a go at doing it again. And I'd let the domain lapse, but thankfully no one else had, and no other Sophie had decided to start up a website called sophiesfood.com. So we registered it again, and I've got a basic WordPress blog template or theme up there now.
Oh, cool.
And so she's going to write up the recipe over the weekend, I think, and get it up.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it goes. It might be a flash in the pan thing where she can't.
Well, that's a great idea.
Until she realises the commitment of, you know, how much time it takes to write up a recipe each week or something. Yeah.
But if she can do it and it's something she enjoys, then that's a great way, isn't it? Mm. You often hear about people that just do that, just blog about stuff that they enjoy.
Yeah.
And then later on they find they've got enough people to start, well, they've got their audience there, and then they can start thinking about selling stuff.
Yeah. And she is a good cook. Yeah. I know I'm biased. But I guess I'm also fussy, so that's a good, maybe I'm a good critic. Cool. How's the freelance project work going?
Okay. I mean, that's, it's just pretty much full time. I mean, it would be a full-time job if I was a sort of permanent employee, but obviously managing my own time. So, but it does take up 40 hours a week. And so it's going okay. I'm having to move it around a bit. And with my new routine of getting up early in the morning, means I'm working in the evening for a couple of hours as well as throughout the day. And I'm getting up at like 6 o'clock in the morning. So pretty knackered most mornings, which is kind of defeating the object a bit, but it reminds me a bit of when Lois was a baby, you know, that sort of feeling you have of a continual tiredness level, but you can still function. And I'm not over the tipping point of, you know, feeling as if I'm not being able to concentrate properly and all that yet. So I think it's okay. And I'm actually getting more done, because that bit in the morning, you know, is amazing for productivity. So, yeah, I think it's working out at the moment. But, yeah, I mean, it's frustrating, you know, when you've got a full-time job on effectively, and you're trying to do this stuff as a side project. It makes me long for the days before I took the project on again, but it's good because it drives me forward to actually do something and achieve something in the time I work on it. It's just that I can get less done, but that's all right.
Have you been writing in your journal?
I have been writing in my journal, every day. I switched a bit, tried writing in the evening rather than the morning and so on, and I think that is better because things are fresh in my mind from the day. So I'm doing less of this is what I want to achieve today and more of this is what I have achieved today and this is what I've done. And then I can usually slot in a couple of things like I want to achieve this tomorrow. So it's good. I think it's good for getting the stuff off your mind, you know, if nothing else, just so you don't have to worry about it anymore. Yeah. How's your run streak going actually while we're talking?
Yeah, it's going well. Still been doing it every day. Yeah. What's the date today? The 15th.
Yeah.
So I did my run this morning because I know we're going out for some beers this evening. So I thought I better get it done this morning.
Yeah.
And it wasn't tough, but I did one yesterday evening and then did one this morning. So that was like a 9-hour gap in between runs. But I mean, I'm only running a mile and mile, 2 miles, most runs, occasionally doing a little bit further. And the obvious goal is to get doing the London Marathon towards the end of April. So I know I've got to start putting some longer runs together.
Yeah.
But then I'm only 15 days into doing this, so I kind of want to listen to my body and not push myself stupidly and pick up an injury, because that would put an end to London Marathon hopes, I guess. So I'm kind of taking it a little bit easy to start with, but we'll start. I think I'm going to do a bit of a longer run on Saturday.
Yeah. And another mile on Sunday. That's a tricky thing, isn't it? Because if you do a long run and then you've got to run the next day if you want to keep the streak going.
But just doing a mile is...
Yeah, it's not that hard, is it?
As Ron Hill did, you probably do it on crutches if you really had to, just to keep the streak going. So I've got loads of stuff to go through in terms of the kind of stuff I've been working on this week.
Okay, wade in then.
So the first thing is one of the things we're doing with VoucherCodes Pro that's important to us, obviously, with SEO is getting links into the site. So yeah. we're creating content, trying to do outreach, trying to get links. And one of the, you know, the social, or one of the indicators or ranking factors that Google uses is social sharing and social, you know, how many times people have tweeted an article out yeah. or liked it or shared it on Facebook and so on. And so we've had social buttons on the site before, but they were kind of ones that we built or added ourselves in. So whereas there's lots of services that you can just sign up to, add a bit of JavaScript on your page, and then add some nice floating buttons along the left-hand side or
right,
along yeah. the top, bottom, that kind of stuff. And the social buttons we had before were just at the top of the blog post, kind of above the title or just yeah. below the title. So once you'd read the article and scrolled down, the social sharing buttons weren't there. So we kind of thought people, that's an obstacle to people sharing them. So we wanted to have some social ones that stuck to the left-hand side and were yeah. always visible. Hopefully we'd get more shares then. So I'm a member of this SEO group on Facebook. It's one of the courses I paid for, actually. It's one of the things you get access to this private group.
Right.
And I asked people there, what do you recommend? And there was two that came forward. I knew of both of them before, so it was quite good. There was addthis.com and SumoMe.
Okay.
And so I tried addthis.com first of all. It seemed all well and good. It was really easy to add to the page, just one single line of JavaScript, and then you go to their site and configure which buttons you want to be displayed in the order, and
right.
there's good tracking stats, and it was showing, you know, we were getting a few clicks.
Did you have to pay for
shares.
It?
Yeah, I think it was $90 for the year.
Right, okay.
I think they... So yeah, it wasn't expensive by any stretch. But then because I check on GT Metrics and web, some of the page testing tools, just to check every now and again, you know, our front page to make sure that no one's added a huge graphic or anything like that, I noticed there was this odd script that was being called. And it was this script to bscorecardresearch.com. And I was like, well, I haven't added any script to this. This site, what's this all about? And I did a little bit of research on Google, and most people were saying it's some kind of virus thing, and it seemed to be a WordPress related thing where people have added a plugin or something, and it may have added this script to their site.
Okay.
So again, doing more sort of a few more Google research things, and obviously, well, this addthis.com support article came up. Well, I obviously checked the domain as well, scorecardresearch.com.
Yeah.
And it turns out, from looking through the site and stuff, it was related to ComScore. And they do some kind of analysis and tracking. They're a huge company, but they basically track people across the web and stats right, yeah. of sites and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And having looked at, some more Google results, addthis.com, some people had asked in their support forums, why is this script being added to our site when we've added, you know, addthis.com,
yeah.
and their response was, we're using this thing to track how many uses our widget is getting. And I don't believe that one little bit.
Yeah.
I think they're being paid by ComScore to add this script into their social widget,
right?
To then, so that ComScore can then track users across all the different websites that addthis.com is added to.
Yeah.
And I think it's really disingenuous of them to add a script in without letting you know when you're adding it to your site. You know, if you use the free version, I can kind of understand it. But when you're paying for the pro version and they're still adding that script in, it kind of really...
It does seem a bit dodgy, doesn't it?
Sat really horrible with me. And one of the replies was, oh, you can go to our site, or is it their site? I can't remember, and opt out. But that means every... Not us as the person that's paying for addthis.com. That means everybody that visits our site would have to go to the site opt out of it. Yeah. And that's just like... That's the most ridiculous thing in the world.
But how does that... Because there's the other thing. There's a thing in the EU, isn't there? Or is it just the UK? About the cookie tracking. You have to pop up the message.
Yeah.
So people have to say, yeah, I'm happy with this level of
cookies. Well, I guess in theory, that's up to our site to say that we're dropping cookies and stuff. Although it's a third party. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's really bad. Because, you know, you'd have to... I mean, you're technically... you know, qualified enough to be able to find that script and know, and then work out what it's doing, but most people wouldn't, and they'd potentially have this cookie being dropped that they don't know anything about, and they're then in breach of this law.
So addthis.com are well and truly in my bad books. I think what they're doing is really immoral, horrible, naughty. Can't think of any. We have explicit marks, so I could swear and call them even worse, couldn't
you?
We won't link to them in the show notes because they want to pass them any Google juice or link equity. But if you're looking for sharing buttons, don't use addthis.com.
Yeah.
So that goes on to then Sumo Me, which is, if you listen to podcasts and stuff, you know Noah Kagan.
Yeah.
He started up the app Sumo thing where they were selling packages of tools and stuff together at a discounted rate. He started up Sumo Me,
yeah,
which is a bunch of, they've got social sharing buttons and also light boxes, things and all,
yeah,
email capture forms.
I've used that on Joint Updates, actually, yeah.
And so I haven't paid for that yet. But it doesn't add any dodgy scripts to your page that I've noticed yet, which is good.
Because I added it without even thinking about that.
Well, to be honest, you know, it's not something I'd thought of really before. I guess in hindsight, it's obvious something you should check and think about.
Yeah.
Just willy-nilly add in. I guess with WordPress, it's got more of a bit of history of, you know, hacked plugins and stuff. So you have to be, like, you know, to kind of check. But I was, you know, just adding this social plugin to just a normal site, I didn't think... Well, I know in future to check every time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So Sumo Me seems to be pretty good, and they've got all this exactly the same functionality once you pay, to being able to pick which buttons you use, good stats and analytics and so on. So we'll see if that, well, just a general experiment of having the social buttons, you know, better usable ones, I guess, adds to more sharing and stuff on the site.
We should catch up on that again next week to see how it's gone.
So yeah, I think a week might be too short, but
do you think?
Certainly, yeah, perhaps in a month's time.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Cool.
Yeah, and so that goes into another area where, because I'd added Sumo Me to the site after that bad experience with Addis.com, I was kind of religiously checking it with GT Metrics to see how it was performing.
Yeah,
and I noticed that they were using Amazon CloudFront for their CDN for delivering some images and stuff, and it was lightning fast in terms of, like, I don't know, 5 milliseconds for delivering. They're only little simple sharing buttons.
Yeah.
But from when I'd tried using a CDN before for VoucherCodes Pro, I'd used the Azure CDN.
Right.
Whatever it's called, a part of Azure, because we're members of BizSpark, so we got some Azure credits for free. And for some reason, because our front page has got quite a lot of images on, because we have our top retailers, and we were loading all the images locally from our web server, and it was pretty slow because we're making so many connections to the same server. That slows it down a bit. So I tried out the Azure CDN, and it was actually slower than serving the images from our web server. Now, maybe I didn't give it long enough to distribute the images across the various CDN servers and stuff. So I am going to try it again. But having signed up for AWS and started using S3 to store the images in, and then CloudFront is their CDN platform, it is lightning fast.
Really
lightning fast. And it's really easy to use as well. I remember Azure I found a bit, you know, not intuitive to use, but I've not put everything into CDN first, it's called, on the front page, but it's cut like 2 seconds off our loading time.
That's really good, isn't it?
So yeah, that makes a big difference.
And does that distribute them around the world as well? So people come, and not your site's just UK based, isn't it? So
it is UK based, but we get visitors from across the world. And you know, I'm not sure whether Google take that into account when checking your page speed scores and stuff. But we're obviously taking load off our web server, which is great, and the images are being delivered much faster, which is fantastic as well. That's really, really good. Really happy with that.
Cool. Excellent.
The one thing I have to say in defense of Azure, because I did put a tweet up saying, you know, really happy with how Amazon seems to be performing, or CloudFront seems to be performing, and I put a little thing saying didn't have great experience with Azure before, and some Microsoft chap was like tweeting me back within about 10 seconds saying, you know, how can I help? Did you try this? Blah, 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 blah. And so, you know, to give them a fair crack, I am going to give Azure another test to see if after a bit more configuration or looking into it, it is as good. Because there's no way that using a CDN it should be slower than serving the images from your local web server, I wouldn't have thought. But
sounds interesting. Yeah, that sounds good. What about problems? Do you have any problems with them caching the images and then you need to change them or anything like that? Or is that not something?
Yeah, well, I did from 2 days of messing around and testing, I had a bit of issues around that. Although within the CloudFront user interface, you can invalidate objects. So then it will go back to the S3 storage and get a new copy of the image. But I think their general guidelines are to use a different file name, so like try and include a version number within the file name. So what I'm going to try and do actually after we finish recording this podcast is put some JavaScript and CSS files up there, And so obviously you have the issue then of if you make any changes, you're going to want to use the latest version all the time. So obviously having some kind of version number within the CSS file name or the JavaScript file name is a way to go with that.
So what will you do for that? Will you compile all of your JavaScript into one file and put it up?
Yeah. Well, because at the moment with ASP.NET MVC, it bundles it all for you automatically, doesn't it? So I'm almost at the point where I might just take a copy of the bundled stuff that they created for me and put it into my own static file and upload that. But I need to do a bit of work around the JavaScript anyway, because I've got some JavaScript hard-coded directly in my pages that I want to strip out and put in a file and then minify and bundle all together. So there's the Visual Studio Web Developer Toolkit, or Web Developer Tools, I think.
Yes.
Which is done by some Microsoft guy, Mads. I want to say his surname, but I'll perhaps get it wrong. Christensen, or something, I think.
Just put it in the show notes.
And they're almost like it's his kind of side project or something he does in his spare time, but it's almost like Microsoft use it as a test bed for adding new bits and pieces into Visual Studio to see what people like, and then if it works well, they'll include it in the next version. And I know, so they had some a few things, tools. Herrera, actually, who mentioned, who gave us the iTunes review mentioned before, they've got some stuff where you can right click on CSS and JavaScript files and it'll minify it for you and bundle them together, I think. So I might check that out and give that a go.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
So that's me.
Yeah. Well,
this week,
Nick, I need some help. I need talking out of something.
Right.
I know it's wrong, but it's back to the old shiny object thing. Or this, in this case, it's a shiny old object.
Right.
It's about 18 months ago. I was interested in writing an app for the Windows Store. So Windows 8 app, I just got Windows 8, you know, and I was playing about with it and I was thinking, I should really learn how to do this in case I'm asked ever to do it. So I wrote a Noddy app around an idea I had. So I was involved with the FSB back then and I was doing committee meetings every month.
Obviously, you know. You better say what the FSB is.
Federation of Small Businesses.
And Noddy.
So the Federation of Small Businesses is a sort of business organisation in the UK. They do a lot of lobbying of government on behalf of small business, both locally and nationally. And, you know, it's broken down into regions and branches, and they're run by the members of the FSB. So I was a committee member and then I was chair for a while and so on. So I was running these meetings for our branch every month, committee meetings. And anyway, the idea was around running these meetings, because it's a pain in the backside. You know, people produce notes and there are actions, so you've got the formal agenda, you've got the minutes, you've got the actions, you've got all this stuff, and it generally results in loads of information flying backwards and forwards. And so, you know, I'd scribble my notes down in my notebook, but I thought, well, why not just write something. I say a Noddy app. What I mean by a Noddy app is just a simple basic app, just something that I can learn how to do the basics and get my head around what's involved. So that's what I did. And it's basically, I built an app which is on the Windows Store, and it's basically just a few text boxes chucked together, really, at the end of it. You know, lists of the meetings, and then the agendas are just a text box, and so on and so forth. Anyway, put it up there. And whenever I do this sort of thing, I always make sure I charge for it rather than just give it away for free. So there's like a 15-day trial, and then at the end of that, you can pay. And I noticed that lots of people were downloading it, and some people were buying it even, and I was amazed. I was thinking, why are they buying it? You know, it's really simple, and so much so that I probably wouldn't even use it myself nowadays, you know. But people are, and so we're 18 months on, and I had a look at the last 12 months of information. It was prompted by getting an email from Microsoft about whether I want to renew my program membership.
Yep.
And in the last 12 months, I've had 349 downloads with 39 purchases. So that's going through the 15-day trial, then using the app and being prompted that you need to pay for it now if you want to use it, and then buying it. So that's an 11% conversion rate, which kind of blew my mind, really, because I was thinking, it's a low number of downloads, but people that are downloading it, 11% of them are then going on to actually buy it, which feels like quite a good number.
How much is it to buy?
It's a fiver. It's like $4.99. So then I'm thinking, I'm tearing my hair out doing all these cold calls on joined up data. I've had one customer, but I've not got any others, and I've not got any leads really that are going to turn into customers. So I'm still really trying to find these customers, and it's a hard slog, and you know, all the rest of it. shouldn't I be focusing on something like this, where I've already, granted it's a low number of downloads, it's not making a lot of money. It's
You've not done any marketing around it, have
no
you?
No marketing. The website gets about 7 hits a month for it. So there's no marketing, nothing. Now, it's a competitive niche, meetings, you know. I mean, I could niche it down to committee meetings or something, you know, or business organisation meetings or whatever. I could probably, you know, pick a corner of that, the whole meetings software niche.
Yeah.
And then market it. Why shouldn't I do that? I need you to talk me out of it.
Well, why don't you do it?
I don't know. Because I'm kind of committed to joined up data, really, and I want that to work. But then I'm also, now, this is like, I don't know whether it's because it's hard going at the moment, trying to find customers for joined up data and trying to find exactly which way I should be going.
Yeah.
Whether that's, because that's hard, this looks extra attractive, or whether this is actually flashing up to me as something that I need to chase down.
Well, I'm working in monthly cycles at the moment in terms of picking a new project to learn and so on. So maybe you should just focus on joined up data for the rest of January.
Yeah.
Do these cold calls, like you say, because you've been doing the bookkeepers and you didn't, that was as much a practice thing.
Yeah.
So do the cold calls to the people who you think would be able to make more use of your tool. And if you get to the end of January and you're still struggling for any kind of traction, then, and you're not, and you haven't got a you know, a next traction thing to go after for it, then at least, you know, maybe just spend a month on this.
Yeah.
I mean, what is it you want to do? Do you want to build a new version or do more marketing around it?
Well, in trying to talk myself out of it, I came up with some sort of a plan, which is put in a pop-up in the app. So if people use it two or three times, the second or third time they use it, it just pops up with a box saying, what could we do to improve this, to make it better for you, or whatever. Just basically get some general feedback and an optional email address field so that they can then send that off and I'd get an email telling me that this is what they've said. And just leave it like that for a while. And then if I get stuff in, then I know that people are using it and there's a bit of interest and I've got some feature ideas. If I don't get anything, then I can put it on the shelf. What do you think about that? Do you think it's worth
like
spending
a
the
day
time
or two's, day or two's work, isn't it?
About 4 hours work. Well, it's nothing.
It's a no-brainer, really.
Yeah.
Do it.
But 4 hours is a scarce time at the moment.
It's like one day, one evening.
Yeah. Yep, you're right. I should do it.
Just do it.
Yeah.
It's not like you're taking on another 6 month project or something like that, is it?
And I think by cutting it down
it's
to just
a small
that,
experiment at the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. Because this is the thing with the shiny new object thing. What I tend to do is I tend to sit down and then I'll, if it nags in the back of my mind for long enough, like a morning or something, then I'll sit down and I'll spend half an hour writing it all down in an Evernote note or whatever. Maybe doing a little bit of research, but maximum an hour, and then tuck it away and forget about it. So I've done it, and then it's out of my mind. And usually the research highlights all the problems with it, and therefore I go off the idea anyway. But with this, you know, it just seems, I can't find anything really that tells me not to do something with it. So yeah, I think I'll do that. I'll put up a little pop-up with a survey or something.
What's your action for next week?
That's one of them, yeah. There you go.
Write that in. Have you written it in?
I haven't, but I will do. All right, thanks for that. Bit of
I want some commission if it takes off. I mean, a bit wild. In terms of a long, I'm gonna turn my phone off. I was gonna say, in terms of a long term project, have you kind of calculated how many you'd need to sell, do you know, to live off or anything like that?
No,
look, or do you not see it as that?
But one of my objectives we talked about is to be earning about £2,000 a month this at the end of the year, coming from products which aren't, you know, me selling my time basically. Now, if this is one of those. That's fine, you know, I don't have a problem with that at all. If it turns into the main thing that I do, then that's fine too. I just don't want to let it die if there's something there, but at the same time I don't want to distract myself from what I'm currently trying to focus on, you know. And it's got all the feelings of a shiny object, but at the same time there's something there. So yeah, okay, 4 hours, limit it to 4 hours on it and then see what happens.
Yep. Well, because I always kind of think it would be quite nice to have a little portfolio of apps.
Yeah.
You know, just nice little simple things that do a job. But you charge people for, but things you know, you spend a month on, get a new one out, get 12 out in a year, can't you?
You can, but I mean, that's not the problem, is it? You know, I mean, this, just from just sitting there in the Windows Store, 350 people have downloaded it. So, you know, the logical thing is market it. And then maybe you get more people downloading it. And then if you keep the 10-11% conversion rate, then that's not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, £5 though, a shot, that's not going to make you a lot of money. You need a lot more than 350 people. But still.
Yeah, but if you're, say, if it's £5, well, I don't know if this will work, but your LinkedIn, well, no, your LinkedIn article only got, it's £3 a click, isn't it?
Yeah.
Not so each of those clicks will turn into a sale, though, will it?
So. Exactly. So, you know. Yeah. It's,
well, you know what your conversion rate is. It's 11%. So
yeah, so I can work out what I can spend. Around.
Yeah.
So it may be not a goer, but if I can, you know, you may be able to have, this is an entry level version, and then you have more involved versions, perhaps with group working or something, you know, that costs more money. So it's a starter, maybe.
Yeah. Well, I think that getting the customer feedback thing is a great idea.
Yeah. And if I don't get any, there's no interest, knock it on the head. That's it.
Yeah.
But okay, cool. Thanks for that.
Right. So as well as having our first iTunes review.
Yeah,
we've had our first email in as well.
We have, yes.
Woo, momentous day. I think you Skyped me yesterday, weren't you? Didn't you? Have you seen, we got an email?
Yeah, we got an email. Ah. Yes, that's Robin Knowles who sent us an email.
Yes, I'll read it out. Says, first up, congratulations on the podcast, loving the content. I'm kind of doing a synopsis of it rather than reading it out.
Yeah.
Love the new audio quality. Only took us five episodes. This is me saying, only took us five episodes to sort out. So on to a real question. Do you guys have any experience with being in a mastermind group? It seems to be popular with solo founders, bootstrappers in the States. But I can't find much mention of them or desire to be part of one here in the UK. Have you been part of one? If so, how do you find it? Do you find it beneficial, or is it not a concept that you buy into? So this is an interesting, really interesting question, because you asked me a question, didn't you? Probably about 3 months ago. I don't know if you remember. We were just walking to get some lunch at the time.
Can't remember what
you just said. You know, are you part of a mastermind group?
Yeah,
have you ever thought of it?
Yeah.
My straight answer was just like, well, funny enough, it's you, Martin. Yeah, you are my mastermind group.
That's it. Yeah, and you're right. That's kind of what we do, isn't it? When we usually involves a few beers, which probably isn't strictly formal as a mastermind group, but it works for us for so long.
Well, when we got together, well, I guess there's a few reasons why we got together to work as well, is because we both work from home.
Yeah,
and so this is a bit different from a mastermind group, I guess, but we both work from home, and that can be a lonely experience by itself, can't it? So being sitting in the house by yourself 8 hours a day. And so there's a local kind of co-working space at a Regis office that you found out about, and we've been going there quite regularly for the past couple of years, maybe a year.
A couple of years,
that's been good. But even before then, you know, we got together once every couple of months, once a month,
yeah,
for some beers and something to eat each evening. And it wasn't really as structured as it is as we're doing on the podcast now, where we had set ourselves actions and things to follow up on and do each week.
No.
But it was good that we, you know, had business problems or
it worked really well for me, because, you know, it just talking stuff through, you know, we might have listened or listened to different podcasts or read different articles in the week or whatever, or we might have different opinions, and just having a sounding board, you know, I call it the nodding dog thing, where you can just talk to somebody and talk about your problems to somebody, and just talking about them helps you solve them in your own head.
Yeah.
And that happened a lot. I mean, when we used to meet up, you know, there'd be so many things that I'd come up with the next day to start working on, which I think was effectively kind of like what people get out of a mastermind. So you're right. I think that was our mastermind, even though it wasn't as formal as some people tend to have them. And now, I do know there is interest in the... At MicroConf EU... last year, I met loads of people from the UK, and lots of them were talking about masterminds and wanting to start masterminds. I think one of the things that I took away was that people that are in them already were saying you need to really be in a mastermind with people at a similar level to you. So, you know, and maybe even a similar business. So if you're selling downloadable software, you maybe want to be in a mastermind group with other people selling downloadable software.
Yeah.
If you've got a SaaS, then you want to be in with people within the SaaS. And I think that makes a lot of sense, because then you can draw on each other's experience to help you through. There's a lot of general stuff which people can obviously help with. Anyone in business can probably help with a lot of the general business stuff. But you know, if you want to get a lot out of it, I think that'd be useful to have a common sort of business model or something.
In terms of how to do it, I think face-to-face meetings would be the best, as we do, because obviously then you can, it's a social aspect as much as anything else. Skype, I guess, would be second if you find people who do live in different corners of the country or the world.
Yeah.
And then email, I guess, would be, you know, obviously with Skype or meeting face-to-face, there's a commitment of having something in a calendar and all being available at the same time.
Yeah.
But obviously you could use email, and then that's got the, you know, the asynchronous nature of being able to read it and dip in and out as and when you can.
Yeah, I think if I was going to be in one, and I would quite like to be in another mastermind group, as well as ours.
Am I not good enough?
So, yeah, I mean, if you have an appointment in the calendar, it's like the thing about going to the gym, you know. If you leave it to yourself to go to the gym, it's harder to go. But if you've got a personal trainer and you've got an appointment, you're going to go. So with a mastermind group, I think if you had an appointment in the calendar every week or every couple of weeks or whatever, whether it be face-to-face or Skype, that would be the best way to do it, for me anyway,
because
that would help make sure I'm there. And by having that there, it makes sure you prepare before you go. So that gets your thoughts in order. And then you're going to take notes and you're going to be more engaged and all the rest of it. So yeah, I think that's the way to go.
Yeah. I thought actually we could be a facilitator for this.
Yeah.
So if anybody wants to get into a mastermind group who's listening, we put our email addresses on each of the show notes, don't we?
Yeah.
So if you drop Martin and I an email and just put a few details about, you know, what set area you're in, whether it's an iPhone app or mobile apps in general, SaaS, website type thing, you know, how far you are along the journey, whether you've been doing it for a year, 5 years, so on, which sector it's in, if it's a particular sector, and then I guess we can try and look and pair some people up.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I guess groups of, you know, 2, 3, 4 people, any more than that, it's a bit difficult to organise dates to be able to speak, isn't it? But
yeah, I think probably three or four would be the best.
Yeah, so by all means drop us an email if you're interested in that, and we can look at getting some mastermind set up for people.
Yeah, cool. I might be the first on the list.
Right, should we move on to Steph?
Yeah, I mean, we touched on it though, talking about conferences that are coming up. Microsoft US has been announced.
MicroConf.
Yeah.
You said Microsoft.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, God. It's on my brain now. The Microsoft Store, that's what it is. Yeah, MicroConf US has been announced in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
I'd love to be going, but I'm not.
I really struggled with this, so I can't remember the exact dates. The dates have been announced, and I guess if you just Google MicroConf, they'll come up. But it's like the second week of April, isn't it?
Yeah.
Or the first week of April, and the London Marathon's around the 22nd, 23rd of April. And so I'm not too worried about the training aspect of it, because you can run anywhere, but I'm more worried about getting on a plane to Las Vegas for 9 hours, picking up a bug, coming back and being ill, and then not being able to do it. So I think I'm not going to go this time.
Yeah. Well, my it's kind of tied to my goal for this year, actually, as well. But my thing about MicroConf US is that once I'm earning money from a product, and that the money I'm earning from that can pay for my ticket out there, then I'll go to MicroConf US if I can get a ticket.
So you went to MicroConf EU.
I've been the last 2 years to MicroConf EU, and it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah, I love it. Yeah,
and so the talks are good, but coming off the topic of masterminds, it's a great place. The networking thing these types of conferences that I've been to has been the most valuable bit. And you can, you know, from the networking and keeping in contact with people you meet there, you can build up your own mastermind groups and have people to bounce ideas off and get advice from.
Yeah, definitely. And that is the best thing about these conferences for me is this, they call it the hallway track, which is, you know, the chatting at the breaks and at lunch and breakfast, and then in the evening, you know, over a few beers or something.
Mm.
All that, those conversations are by far the best thing that I find when I go there. And the talks are great as well, obviously, but that's where the real meat is.
Yep. So MicroConf US, is the date's been announced. Get yourself on the mailing list, I guess, and then they send an email out when the general availability for the tickets goes on. But they sell out like within hours, don't they, generally? They do, so you have really to be quick.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Related to that, there's a London Bootstrapped meetup.
Yeah, that's been going for a while now. Charlie Irish and Happy Bear Software.
Right. So you've been along to one of these before, haven't you? I've not been. I'm going. It's going to be my first one at the end of January.
Yeah, so it's Charlie and Ali, I think is the other guy. Sorry, can't remember his surname, but I met them at MicroConf Europe, actually, the year before. And they told me about this meetup that they were having, and I've been along to a couple of them, and they're good, really good bunch of people, and it involves beer. It's usually meet in a pub, so that's always good as well.
Yeah,
and we've both signed up to go to the next one, haven't we?
Yeah, looking forward to it, actually.
Yeah, so am I.
Yeah,
be good.
So there was two stories I saw yesterday that kind of interested me. Just to mention an interesting stuff, 3D printing in health.
Right.
I don't know if you saw either of these two stories.
I saw you'd put the links in the notes and I had a quick look. Yeah, it's fascinating.
So the first one was a UK story, and it's funny they both came out on the same day, really. Some UK guy, he's into both of these people were into 3D printing already, so But the guy was actually giving a presentation to some part of the NHS. I guess it's down south because it's on the local news. And he's given a presentation to the NHS about 3D printing and the effects or impact it can have on the medical or the NHS. And he collapsed as he was giving his talk because of a kidney stone. Which I didn't realise you could collapse from kidney stones, but I guess I the pain is perhaps too much.
It's quite painful, I think.
Yeah. You know, off he goes. And so he had quite a large kidney stone anyway, and because he was into 3D printing and all that kind of stuff, he printed a model of his kidney and whereabouts the kidney stone was, and then the surgeons used this model when they were doing the keyhole surgery or whatever it was to get rid of this kidney stone. They used the model and were like holding it as they were kind of navigating around him to get rid of his kidney stone.
That's amazing.
That's like the best example of how to give a presentation and then demonstrate applications of the perhaps he did it on purpose.
He got the sale.
Yeah. So there was that, and then like literally the afternoon I was looking on Hacker News, I think it was, and there was an article published about some guy. Again, he was into 3D printing already, but his wife had some kind of tumour around the brain area, and it was towards her, around close to her eye area, I guess. And first of all, you know, I'm summarising again here, so it's better to read the article itself because I'll get bits and pieces wrong, no doubt. He basically built up a 3D model of his wife's skull, and first of all sent off, you know, the 3D model to lots of surgeons. He found some networking group of brain surgeons or neurosurgeons or something and showed him the problem and all the issues, and some guy decided to take the surgery on because lots of surgeons were saying they couldn't do it or something.
Yeah.
Or they were saying they were going to go the normal route of taking his wife's skull off, picking her brain out and then getting this tumour out or what have you. Oof. But because he built up this 3D model and showed where the tumour was and everything, one surgeon was willing to use, I think it was still an experimental process of going in above her left eyelid to get rid of it. And then obviously he printed out the 3D model again as well to then be able to help the surgeon, you know, plan the surgery and execute it all and everything. And I think she's made a full recovery from it. So
that's amazing, isn't it? It's absolutely amazing.
I remember we went to an FSB meeting, didn't we? There was a 3D printing group there who were kind of showing off bits and pieces.
Yeah. Really, really good. And they were doing, there's another one in Reading as well. There's a group in Reading. Is it Reading Hackathon? Something like that. There's a group. I'll put the link in the show notes. But they do all this 3D printing and they go around at these events. And there was another one where they were doing 3D selfies.
Right.
So they do a scan sort of thing of your head and then they print it out as a scan of your own head. It's fantastic. But it is amazing. And I noticed the other day, I think yesterday after you've put the links in there, there's an advert on the telly these days for a magazine that's coming out about 3D printing. So it's really getting big, you know, and they're talking about, I can't remember the detail of it, but I think they're giving away bits so that you can buy the magazine and get a bit to build your own 3D printer, you know. So it's amazing. It's
obviously a huge thing. A lot of people are going to make a lot of money from it.
Yeah.
And I remember being at the FSB meetup thing with those guys, and I'd had a couple of beers. So I was kind of like, you know, are you guys not going to commercialise what you're doing in any way? How are you going to make some money from doing this?
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we're not really interested in money. We're just doing it for, you know, the interest and fun of doing it. And I was thinking earlier on, thinking about doing a podcast, I was kind of thinking it's a bit sad that those guys probably won't make that much money from it unless they decide to pursue it as a career.
Yeah.
But then from another aspect, I don't think they were that bothered, were they?
They enjoyed doing it
for the fun of learning and creating new stuff. And
yeah, and they were busy. I mean, I remember the event we were at, there were two or three people demonstrating stuff and they were hogging everybody. Everybody was queuing up to look at the 3D printing.
I guess, again, it comes back to some of the stuff I was talking about last week around the learning stuff in terms of, you know, us trying to bootstrap businesses. We always think about everything we're doing in terms of selling it and trying to make money from it.
Yeah.
You just want to get back to the aspect of doing stuff for the fun and joy of doing it and for the learning aspect of doing it, not focus so much on the money. But we've got to pay the bills at the end of the day.
Absolutely, that's it.
So you're next. You got a link next.
Have I? What's that? Oh, Seth Godin. The Seth Godin thing. This is something that I think I saw on Twitter. I think Dave Collins tweeted it. And it was just Seth Godin. Whenever he says something, it's kind of probably worth having a listen because he's fantastic in the marketing area, and he's just published an article about 5 thoughts on software, and it kind of struck me a bit because we talk a lot about MVPs and people releasing. If you're not embarrassed about your software when you release it, then it's you've released it too late, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I think that's still valid, in that you want to get something out there so you can start getting feedback, because otherwise you don't know what you're building. But I think also you need to be careful about what it is your MVP is, because, you know, if you put out something which doesn't solve any problems or isn't enough to do it well enough for people, then you're not going to get the right kind of feedback. You know, you might not get any feedback because people might not even buy it. And that's kind of the stuff that he's talking about. You know, I'll put a link so you can read all five thoughts, but one of them is about how software, compared to like buildings and roads and all the rest of it, it's relatively simple and quick to change to make it better.
Yep.
And the sorts of things he's talking about is, you know, we're not backing up our software, our files enough and all the rest of it, people losing files and all sorts by hardware's failing, all the rest of it. And he's kind of suggesting, well, we shouldn't really have to back up. The software should do it for us, you know. And things like, he's talking about supporting indie software developers because you get the niche products, which is perfect for what you want. And we need to do more of that, support of that, obviously. But the main thing I took out of it is about this idea of software needs to be better at what it's doing. There's been a race to sort of free almost with the app stores and all the rest of it, which is reducing the amount of money people can make from software, which is maybe reducing the quality of some of it as well. But, you know, I think we just need to bear in mind that whatever it is you release, it needs to be good enough to do the job at least, and hopefully make it as simple as possible for people. But yeah, have a read of the article. I think it's good.
Yeah, the best thing I've seen around the whole minimum viable product recently was an image on Twitter that I retweeted. I'll try and find it. We can include it in the show notes. And it was saying about the MVP, and it had what typical people do is they'll have an idea and they'll develop loads of features, but do the minimum viable product for 10 different features and release that. But it's much better just to choose one of the features and do that feature properly and fully, and that be the minimum viable product rather than be 10 crappy features, have one that's really, really good and that solves a specific need.
I think it's difficult actually to have a general rule, because it very much depends on what it is you're building. You know, if you're building, I can't think of a great example, but you need to know what the problem is you're trying to solve and make sure you've solved it, because, you know, if solving that problem takes five different features, then you need to implement them all in your MVP. Otherwise, you haven't solved the problem and it's not going to be useful. Now, if there are some bells and whistles that would make things slightly easier, then maybe that's not part of the MVP. But, you know, you need to solve the problem first and foremost, I think.
Yep. Right, actions for next week.
So I picked up one in the last however long it is we've been talking, which is to add this pop-up in my meeting software to see if I can get some feedback on that. And also more cold calls. I'm going to try and make 7 cold calls again next week about joined up data.
Yep. So mine, this is actually a link to something in Steph as well. I'm going through the back catalogue of Bootstrapped Web podcast. And so I listened to the one where he interviews the founder of She'sGotSystems.com, which is all about, she goes in and helps people systemize their business. Okay. So it helps the founders, you know, get released from the day-to-day work and either go take a holiday or think of a bigger picture a bit more around their business and strategy stuff. And that's interesting because obviously I'm getting into the aspect now where I need to start working with Alex around getting the content created for his site.
Yeah.
So there's two aspects that I want to do. First of all, I kind of want to work on almost a welcome pack, which I would then give to people as they take on their sites, which kind of goes through, you know, what's expected from them from a content creation process.
Right.
Content creation requirements to get their site up and going.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part one. And then part two, I kind of want to work on a marketing piece, which is an ebook or some kind of, not course, but, you know, a guide that can go up on the site around how teaching golf professionals can make more use of social media and email newsletter lists and their website. Yeah. So really kind of selling the service that I'm offering to a certain degree. So to get started on that marketing material. So that's two things around that.
Yeah, cool. That's kind of, sounds like quite a lot as well.
I'm not sure I'll get them finished, but I want to get some progress on them.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah.
Cool. Great. All right, well, excellent. We'll look forward to having some beers later on tonight.
Fantastic, yeah. We won't be recording then. Probably not a good idea to do a...
But we'll be back next week.
Yep. All right. Cheers, Martin. Bye.
Bye.